It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, sponsored by Trenton Interiors. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue goes deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Tonight's show on ESPN 97.7 is also brought to you by National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, Delta Broadband, Walpole Tire, and Fairway Carts. Now here's your host for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio, episode 8 of season 9, brought to you by Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston. Go see those folks for all your interior decorating needs on South Trenton Street in downtown Ruston. Give us a call on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline or text the text line 888-993-7762. Big W for Louisiana Tech Thursday.
I'm not used to it either.
Big W Thursday night against Western Kentucky breaks the Western Kentucky win streak inside of Conference USA. 13-game win streak snapped in Ruston. 55-52 was a whole lot more interesting than it had to be. What's new?
Yeah, I mean, just like the Middle Tennessee game, you know, Tech seems to be in control sometime in the third quarter, and then boom, the other team starts coming back. And, you know, we can try to debate why that is, but luckily this time for Tech that they were able to hold on and get the win, but they sure made it interesting.
You know, and Coach Holtz says the defense is getting better. He doesn't think they're very good still. He called them not a very good defensive football team right now. But you can see spots where they're getting better. You look at a 52 spot put on the scoreboard, and you would say, where in the world was the defense? But the real question to me is, where in the world was special teams?
Yeah, special teams set up a lot of those scores. I mean, there was one long kick return or punt return.
Yeah, I think they went 16 yards to score on that one.
Yeah, just had a couple plays, and they're in the end zone. So,
and then a block punt for a touchdown.
They started squib kicking it halfway through the first quarter.
Yeah, after the first two or three returns.
I don't think I've ever seen that before.
And that guy's special. I mean, there's no doubt that kick returner is special, but you've got to be able to – you've got to tackle and cover kicks better than that.
Yeah. I would say special teams definitely let the defense down. I'm not saying the defense played great, but they didn't give up 50 points. That was not all on them.
Anthony Wales for Western Kentucky, the running back, 14 carries for 83 yards. I really thought that Tech was pretty good against the run. In that second half, as on the sidelines, everybody's discussing why in the world is Tech not blitzing, getting more pressure on the quarterback. But it was obvious that Tech was playing with a lead and did not want to give up the big play, because that is what that Western Kentucky offense is predicated on.
Yeah, but then the question is, do you get out of what you're doing, both on offense and defense? That Manny Diaz defense is all about being aggressive. So if you start playing back, letting them catch it, and then trying to tackle, run some time off the clock, the old Sonny Dykes kind of way, you let Western Kentucky get in a rhythm, and then they start scoring. And then on offense,
the Sonny Dykes kind of way was not that. He kept the foot on the pedal against Houston, and whenever your drives don't work, they've got tons of time left on the clock.
But I was talking about defense. On defense, they were all about the Tommy Spangler defense. Bimba don't break. Stay back, let them catch it, then everybody gang tackle. Don't let them make the big play. But the problem is, if they get 3, 4, 5 receptions in a row, they get momentum. And then when you're on offense, if you're bleeding that clock and then you do too many conservative play calls, like run it up the middle, and you do have a 3-and-out, then that just gives them even more momentum. So I felt like Tech lost their aggression on offense and defense and got out of what they were doing the whole game that was successful. Keep throwing those crossing routes to Taylor and Anderson. That's how you're scoring all these points. Don't slow it down and start running it too much up the middle, because it wasn't working. They were stuffing them. So I'm hoping after we see these two third quarter slowdowns against Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky, I'm hoping going forward, if they get some leads here in the next couple games, that they'll put that foot on the throat and go try to score 100.
Complacency. I mean, it's
– I don't think it was complacency. I just think they were being too careful.
It might have just been that they didn't expect themselves to be up that high – or that far ahead that soon in the game.
Maybe so. I mean, that's a good point. Maybe it surprised them, but now that they've been in that situation twice, it can't surprise them again. That now they know.
Yeah,
this is what happens.
I see that point, but I go back to that Houston game with Sonny Dykes. And that was the last, I guess, meltdown, for lack of a better term, of a team inside the Joe where you have a huge lead and then it's gone.
Yeah, what was it, 31-3 or something?
And that was a game where Sonny didn't play with a lead at all, and he didn't bleed the clock. So it's one of those danged if you do, danged if you don't kind of scenarios. If you don't bleed the clock and you give the and you don't get some scores, you give the ball back to the opposing team quickly, and then they score quickly.
Oh, yeah, and I totally agree with that. I don't have a problem with bleeding the clock. I just felt like they got away from their plays that were successful, the crossing routes to Taylor,
but if you,
to Henderson. Henderson was killing them.
But if you throw the ball and something falls incomplete, then you've stopped the clock. You might as well have not.
But if you don't throw the ball, then they know you're not going to throw the ball. Then they're just going to three and out punt, which is what happened.
But you don't have a crystal ball.
No, I don't, but you've got
and
to keep doing.
Neither does Skip Holtz.
You've got to keep doing what you've been successful for 2.5 quarters. If you start just getting too conservative and they know what you're going to do, then you're just going to punt, and then they're going to score more points.
But you're saying you understood why he did it.
I understood why he bled the clock, the play calling I thought was too conservative.
But you can't bleed the clock if you throw incomplete passes. That's my point.
But Higgins is getting very, very efficient with these little short passes, little screen passes. They're almost like a running play. Just throw it out to Henderson.
But he's still not completing 100% of the passes, which no quarterback does. So you're throwing 67%.
You're running more clock.
What word did you say?
First down.
If.
You're not getting it if you hand the ball up the middle 3 times in a row. Not happening.
But if you throw an incomplete pass, you might as well have done nothing because you just stopped the clock.
Yeah, and basically that's what happened in a couple of those possessions. They might as well have done nothing.
But at least you had 3 plays where the clock ran for
a minute and a half?
2 minutes. That's more than zero.
Yeah, but then Western Kentucky can score in 30 seconds.
In the long run, it didn't really make much of a difference if it was 2 minutes or 30 seconds because Western Kentucky scored. I mean,
they scored so quick, and so I felt like Tech needed
to keep
scoring
to
and not be so conservative.
What did you just say?
That could also come back to special teams.
Well, yeah. I mean, the block punt was the biggest reason that it was so close.
So without the block punt, the green plan works perfectly.
You win by 10, but still, that's 2 out of the last 3 games where you're playing a pretty good team, and you let them get back in it. And so I think,
but if it's a 2-score game, you're not back in it.
Yeah, I mean, 10 points is better than what was the lead, 21. I don't remember.
So then you've taken a 4-possession game into a 2-possession game, or a 3-possession game into a 2-possession game.
You're giving them a chance. You gave them a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
But your argument is not holding a whole lot of water. That's my point.
Okay, my point is they've let the last 2 good teams they played, they were killing them. They let them get back in it.
But to go from a 3-score game to a 2-score game, it's not that big of a difference.
To go from 21 down to 10, and then you have that special teams because Western Kentucky had all the momentum, something was obviously – everybody in the stadium. I mean, the people standing around me were like, oh, crap, Western Kentucky gets the ball back. They're about to win this game. They have all the momentum. And it took a fumble to save them. I mean, you gave them all the momentum because you're getting too conservative. You got to keep doing what you're doing that got you there.
You do have to run the clock out, but it's.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't have passed it some.
No,
but
just once or twice, mix it up, make them guess.
I see that, but it go especially across the middle of the field. I know that, and that's what you're calling for is this crossing patterns. That's the most dangerous pass in the whole football field because you've got so many bodies in the middle of the play. You're not going to do that. Now, a screen pass, yeah, I could see that.
Screen pass to Henderson or one of those little quick passes to Taylor. I mean, he and Higgins obviously have got a pretty good connection going. You know, it was working. It was working really good.
The T package, giving it to Cam McKnight every single time, that's not working.
No. I mean,
you got to do something else out of that package. And it seems like they audible. They check the play, and they go into a different play. Well, what was the previous play? Not going to give it to Cam McKnight, and then you gave it to Cam McKnight? I don't get that at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good thing is, you know, obviously they lost at Middle Tennessee, but the good thing is on this one they won. And now they know what happens in certain situations, so I'm hoping to see some improved third quarters here going forward. And, you know, we talked about some of the teams, you know, the last couple of weeks that are coming up on the schedule. I mean, these are some bad teams. UMass, FIU, and Rice. Now, North Texas and UTSA seem to be a little improved, but they're further away. They're in November, so we're not worried about them quite yet. UMass, FIU, their top 100 defenses, they're solid on defense. They're okay. But their offenses are horrible. I don't expect Louisiana Tech to have any problems to go into these two places and score points.
You better knock on wood.
That should not be an issue. Should not.
But what you said is it is a win, and I think we'll probably get to this later. UTSA over Southern Miss. In the long run, I mean, as close as it was.
And North Texas over Marshall.
That win over Western Kentucky is going to, paired with the loss by Southern Miss, is going to be huge for the end of the season.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
You go through the Tech statistics. Jared Kraft, short of 100 yards, but played very well. To your earlier point, 14 carries, 78 yards, one touchdown, a long of 29. Ryan Higgins was fantastic. 33 completions from 45 attempts, 454 yards, five touchdowns, a long of 63 to a guy named Carlos Henderson, who was back from injury. And man, was he back. Eight catches, 232 yards, three touchdowns. Trent Taylor, 13 catches, 108 yards. It's just kind of the stat line we expect from Mr. Taylor these days. Jared Kraft, he's really good in the passing game. I think that his hands are underestimated. Eight catches, 53 yards, and a long of 12 and two touchdowns. Cam McKnight does what he does with the ball in his hands. He makes somebody miss. He runs somebody over. He had a catch for 33 yards. Tarzan got him a first down, a crucial first down on a third down, for one catch for 10 yards. Marcus Gaines, one catch for 9, and Boston Scott, one catch for 9. Ryan effectively spread the football around Thursday, which was absolutely enormous. Jonathan Barnes, we talk bad about Tech special teams, 54-yard field goal that proved to be the difference in the ball game. Big-time kick. The third longest field goal in Tech history, longest since Chris Bonio. Even a guy named
Stover didn't do it. Scobie didn't do it.
Stover nor Scobie did it. And those two guys, at least one of them, Stover had a long career in the NFL. It's shocking
Scobie
to me.
Pretty much has too.
Shocking that Scobie hadn't gotten back on a roster, but he's had a long career in the NFL as well.
Earned him some Conference USA special teams honors and the Louisiana Writers Association.
And Carlos Henderson, the same way. Carlos was a co-offensive player of the week in the conference, and then the
offensive player of the week for Louisiana Sports Writers.
Punting is still dreadful. I don't know. I don't know what. Now they're on the second punter. Logan McPherson got a try this week. One punt for 36 yards. And it was returned for 18 yards. So you got a net of 18. Might as well have not punted. Now that's when you shouldn't have punted it. You might as well have gone for it.
Well, and what was
Holt's, throw an interception.
What was Coach Holt saying at the beginning of the season before they played the first game? You know, I guess when Higgins was out with the suspension, he said the best offense might be the punter. I'm glad we didn't have to see him punt too much.
Punting is not good. And you know those two receivers for Western Kentucky were good. Nicholas Norris are really the three. Nicholas Norris, Nicarius Fant, and Taywan Taylor, all very good. Had 9, 6, 10 catches.
Oh,
all 70 plus yards.
Yeah,
Taylor's a stud. He really is. Tech took the big play ability of him away because he only had 9 catches for 71 yards, but he did have 2 touchdowns. His long was 9. So that's good on Tech for containing him. Norris and Fant had longs of 31 and 23. Norris had 2, 3 touchdowns. Overall, good game. We'll continue this breakdown of the Western Kentucky game following the break. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7, brought to you by Trent Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston. Go see those folks in the historic Rogers Furniture Building. Give us a call on the Fairway Carts Amendment Hotline or send us a text on the text line, 888-993-7762. One note from the game is Ryan Higgins is now the FBS leader in attempts since an interception. We did get a tweet saying that we jinxed it. If you're superstitious or even just stitious, yeah, we may have. But 181 pass attempts since his last interception, which was in the first half of the South Carolina State game.
Yeah, and I mean, I did not expect that of him this year. I felt like turnovers were going to be his biggest problem. And it seemed like he was still putting the ball in danger a little bit the last few weeks and was getting lucky that they weren't coming down with it. There was one where they were backed up against the end zone against UTEP, and I thought, oh, boy, here comes a pick six. But, man, that was the game of his career against Western Kentucky. He was not putting it in danger. He knew exactly where he wanted to go. He was decisive. He was hitting all his shots. Those deep passes to Henderson were really something, and they were on the money. He just looked like a totally different player. He was playing with confidence, and he was not second-guessing himself at all. And you can tell after sitting out a couple of years, now that he's played five games, he's really getting into things, and he's playing way better than he did against South Carolina State.
And I think, Ford, you mentioned it. It might have been last week. Whenever he's playing on a short rest, not as much preparation, whenever he can just go out there and do his thing, he has good games. And what do you know?
I think somebody actually said it on the Bleed Tech Blue message board, and that was a great point, that yep. on a short yep, week, he can't get inside of his own head, can't think too much. And really, on the flip side, what that did is gave him a lot of confidence and should really help him going forward.
Well, and another thing that should give him a lot of confidence going forward is the defenses that they're playing the next 5 weeks. I mean, he should be licking his chops. I think the highest-ranked one is I can't remember now. Either UMass or FIU are ranked somewhere. No, I'm sorry. UTSA is ranked 60th. UMass is 75th. This is before last week's games. And then everybody else was 90-something or worse. And so he and Carlos and Trent and Kraft, those guys should be licking their chops because they are about to put up some points.
In the I said something, another stat that we needed to talk about. What was that during the break? It was real profound, I'm sure. But from a defensive perspective, I think this team really does keep getting better. I know that they're still not close to being a good defensive football team, but I really feel good about where these guys are right now and where they are going forward.
Well, and another thing that was brought up on the message boards, I mean, somebody said, you've had an NFL-level nose tackle in there the last, 4 years with Jelly Bean and then Vernon, and then the guy that's supposed to come in there and be that guy is Courtney Wallace this year, and he's hurt. And so you're really kind of undersized in there. I mean, Bradford and Brown are starting inside, and those were guys that came to Louisiana Tech as defensive ends. They've gained weight. They've gotten stronger. They're good players, but they're like 280, 290. They're used to playing next to somebody that's 330. So to make Bradford kind of be that big, giant nose tackle, that's just not his game. And they're having trouble standing up to the run. Now, they're still 49th in the country in rush defense. But just not having that big presence in there to draw the double team, I think, is affecting the pass rush and making the pass defense suffer like it is, 117th in the country in pass efficiency defense.
Let's go to the Fairway Carts Amendment Hotline with our good buddy Rafe. It's a little early for his weekly call, but here he is nonetheless. What's going on, my man?
Oh, not much, man. I had to call early because I've got a couple errands to run later. Hey, this isn't what coaches do necessarily. This is what fans do. But I just like to analyze the conference and how we match up and, whether or not we can beat certain opponents in certain situations. And to me, the variable that's so obvious that you've already mentioned it, but what separates the Middle Tennessee game from the Western Kentucky game is Carlos Henderson. And because to me, I thought Western Kentucky is, I think they're better than Middle Tennessee. I think they'll beat them this week because they're a superior team. But you cannot account for both Taylor and Henderson. You can't defend both of them because Henderson he's a big time player. He's just going to, if you try to one on one him, he's just bigger, faster, stronger than any defender you can put on him. And if you take that attention away from Taylor and put it on Henderson, then you have to pick your poison with both of those guys. So that one key element that's been missing, he didn't play against Middle Tennessee. We lost him in the game against Texas Tech because I don't think they could cover him either. He makes a world of difference. And then to me, on defense, We are what we are at linebacker. I do like how they've put Harris, you know, they're starting him now along with Ferris. And so those two guys, and with the third, not Grogan, but the, you know, the other big
Cooper.
Big safety.
Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper. That's what we have, okay? But you need one more cover corner. And to me, if Kitchen could ever get healthy, then this team will be what it can be. And that's a team that nobody in this conference can beat, period. Nobody can beat us.
Well,
and we can beat ourselves, but I don't think any other team can match up with us once we get everything on the field.
Well, and looking at the strength of the conference, I mean, Massey has Middle Tennessee at 71. Tech loses to them on the road, but should have won. Tech 75th. Western Kentucky is right behind them at 76. And then there's nobody else. I mean, Southern Miss has dropped all the way down to 90, even though they're 4-2. And then it's just ugly after that. You have to get all the way down to, I believe, Marshall. No, Texas San Antonio at 108. Even Marshall's behind them at 114. So we mentioned Marshall losing to North Texas on the road. Well, Marshall's now 1-4. You know, maybe they're just not the Marshall that they used to be. So really, Texas faced the two top teams in the conference with only Southern Miss, even a top 100 team, left.
Yeah, you can, and it's fortunate that we have UTSA at home, because those Texas teams that are physical and will grind you and get after your quarterback, like UTSA, is they're problematic when you play them on the road. I mean, I think even North Texas is a legitimate threat, because they do play a physical brand of football, and they can kind of match you athlete to athlete. And so, but I think we can beat them on the road. I'm glad that we get UTSA at home. But to me, I think that we've really exerted ourselves as being the premier team in the conference when we're playing right. We have all our players and we're playing right. And really, it's ours at this point in my mind, it's ours to lose. I mean, I realize that we still have an undefeated Middle Tennessee, undefeated ODU, but that's on the other side. You know, if we take care of our business, then we have a straight line to the conference championship game. Not that it's a given, you know, because we could lose to teams. We're not so superior that we can't be beaten. But I feel like we are improving, that we played probably the two best teams besides us in the conference. Would have beaten Middle Tennessee had we had Henderson. I mean, I firmly believe that.
Well, Henderson played. Henderson got hurt in that game, I believe. He had a long touchdown. I just looked at the stats.
Okay, so I thought that he got Gibby in the Texas Tech game, so I'll retract that. But either way, he was a problem for them. They can't match up with them, and Taylor just can't do it. So if he can stay healthy, which we know he's had health issues, he's kind of gimpy at times, but if he can stay healthy, I mean, he is a threat. I mean, I thought he sealed the win with that late first down in the game against Western Kentucky. And, you know, we won the game. I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, the last punt that we had was, I think it's pretty decent, to tell you the truth. Pinned them back. They're going to try to roll, and we sent the house, and it was a clean strip, took the ball from the guy. I mean, that's what you do to win the game. And so the game's won, period. In 3 weeks, we won't be talking about whether or not we should have beaten them by more points. The point is we beat them. So anyway, I feel good about it going forward. You know, UMass is not a game that we have to win, so to speak, but it's a game we should win, and it's a game where we should really cultivate our weapons further, that we should, you know, there's some ways that this offense needs to expand and do some different things, and I think that we're going to attempt to do that, and Jared Kraft is, I mean, he is something else. I mean, he is really, I don't know if there's a better running back in the conference. I know that UTEP's guy is supposed to be, but with his pass-catching abilities and his, power, and then we saw that speed. He's got the full package, the full arsenal. He's also a good pass blocker with all that bulk. So I feel good about it. I just wish we get Kitchen back. I don't know if he, you know, how close he is or if he's close or what's the story on that?
I expect him to medically register at this point. I think he's got a little bit of an ankle injury. Don't expect him back this year. And that same goes for Courtney Wallace. I think that, especially since Courtney was in that group of redshirt players in their pump up group at the home game, got his dance on CBS Sports Network. So I don't expect either one of those guys for the rest of the year.
Well, the good thing is,
Courtney's got the redshirt year, so I mean that makes perfect sense. He plays a true freshman. You know, Ephraim took it last year, the redshirt, or I guess they figured all that out at the end, but so he doesn't have the year to give.
That's true. And I mean, you could see him by the end of the year, but I don't expect it.
Lip him out there. Tell him, come on. Dude, he's just living with Ron's playing with the sore groin. Just tell him, come on, let's get out there. You see what happens.
They need him.
You'll be all right. Rub some dirt on it. You'll be all right. He's going to be, you know. But that's what I feel about it. You know, if we could get him back on defense, then you have a lockdown guy that where you can, you know, send the house. You can trust them to be able to run with a good receiver.
And I actually was thinking Dancy. I don't expect Dancy the rest of the year, but yeah, I think Kitchen will be back in a few weeks. I think he's been cleared. They're just trying to make sure that groin is 100% before they throw him out there, which makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. And Dancy's got the year to give anyway. He probably should have redshirted last year, but he didn't. So redshirted this year, everything's good. Everything's good with Wallace. Kitchen, you know, I'm saying that the worst thing you could do is get out there and not be ready, but he's not going to get the redshirt. So you go ahead and play him anyway as soon as he can, you know, run.
Sure. Well, Rafe, we really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
Hey, man, you know what I said a couple of weeks ago. I said that I feel like this team is not going to lose any more games, and I still feel that way. And maybe they'll prove me wrong, but it's not from a perspective of being just a sunshine pumper. I really think we have the best team in the conference, so let's see how it plays out.
Absolutely. Appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thank you, man. Talk to you later.
On the other side of the break, we'll have Javi Cardenas from birdsup.com. We're going to recap a little bit of Conference USA football from the previous weekend and preview of the week here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We're brought to you by Trent Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston. For all your interior decorating needs, go see those folks in the historic Rogers Furniture Building. On the Fairway Carts Amendment Hotline, we have Javi Cardenas from BirdsUp.com joining us to recap the week in Conference USA football and preview this coming week inside the conference. Javi, how's it going, my man?
Fantastic. How are you guys?
Doing good. A little bit of a surprising game there in San Antonio last weekend as the Roadrunners upset the Golden Eagles of Southern Mississippi inside the Alamo Dome. Tell us what happened in that game, if it was a surprise to you, because it was for us.
Yeah, I mean, you'll be hard-pressed to find somebody that would have picked UTSA to win, and I'll go even further, win by the margin that they won by. I'll be honest, I actually picked UTSA to win on Saturday. I don't know why, I just felt like it was going to be a tricky game for Southern Miss. I kept going back to being 11 a.m. in the morning. You know, those morning games tend to get a little weird every once in a while, and wouldn't you know it, UTSA started out hot. They went up 21-7, and they really didn't look back. They dominated a pretty good Southern Miss team, a team that some picked to win the Conference USA West. So it was a surprise. They played really well. They played four quarters, which is something they hadn't done all year. And Southern Miss just never got their feet under them. They got punched in the mouth early. They never bounced back. It was a surprise. I expect UTSA to win a close game. I did not expect them to be score 55 points on one of the best defenses in the conference.
Javi, we had Alex Nicholas from MinorRush.com on with us last week, and he and I talked about how much different this UTSA team is at home inside the dome, in no matter what the season is. This season is no different than any other. They're very different and a whole lot better when they're playing inside that dome. What is it about the Alamo Dome that's so tough to play in?
UTSA does seem to have a better record in San Antonio inside the Alamo Dome. Something that gets overlooked, I think, by some people, even though the Alamo Dome is an extremely big venue, it holds 65-plus. UTSA is only using the lower half right now of the Alamo Dome, but it gets extremely loud in there. I've had a chance to be on field level for a couple of the games, and it's really amazing how loud it gets on the field. And that's really with maybe 25,000 people, 20,000 people. So you get UTSA gets going early, the crowd gets into it. There's been a couple games where the opposing team has multiple false starts early. But it's weird. UTSA really likes to play in the Alamo Dome.
Then you look at the rest of the conference. The other surprise that for some was that Tech knocked off Western Kentucky, of course, and then the other one would be North Texas demolishing Marshall at home. Probably not the Marshall of old, but still shocking to see North Texas, who hasn't had a pulse on the football field in years, beats Marshall 38-21 in Denton.
I guess we all expect Marshall to a certain standard in Conference USA. They tend to win between 8 and 10 games every year. So for a North Texas team to win was last year, even though the game was in Denton, that was a big surprise for me. Marshall just doesn't seem to be a good team this year, honestly. They don't have a single FBS win this year. If you look at their schedule, their only win was against FCS team, and I mean UNT seems a little revitalized under Seth Luttrell, so it's really good to see two teams that were on the bottom of Conference USA last year in North Texas and UTSA kind of jump back into it, be a little bit more competitive, and hopefully it's a new phase for the West, for Conference USA West.
Well, I will say that North Texas win, you kind of look at their schedule, they lost to SMU, who's pretty bad. They beat Bethune-Cookman, lose to Florida 32-0. It took them two overtimes to beat Rice, 42-35, and Rice has been awful this year. And then they lost to Middle Tennessee at home, 30-13. So I don't know if we're reading a little bit too much into that Marshall win. Maybe it's just more that Marshall's bad. But, hey, give credit to North Texas for at least winning the home game and the fact that they're 3-3. I don't think they've been 3-3 for a while.
Javi, you talked about the Western Division, and I had this kind of thought today. It looks like that the Western Division is maybe stronger than the Eastern Division, and nobody expected that this season. With North Texas is better, UTSA is better, Southern Miss is Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech is probably better than many thought they would be, even though the early in the season they teased the fan base by nearly beating Arkansas and being in a game with Texas Tech. Really, the Western Division seems to be stronger, except outside of UTEP and Rice. I mean, you can't say that you're strong when you've got UTEP and Rice in your division. But outside of those two teams, the West looks like they're stronger overall than the East.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, a big surprise, at least for me, the East, at least in the last couple of years, they always seem to be a step ahead of the West. Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, Marshall, those teams have always been really solid for Conference USA, and this year it seems, well, at least for Marshall, they took a step back. Western Kentucky doesn't look as good. They're still a respectable squad, but they seem to lack something this year. And then Middle Tennessee is solid. They have a great offense. They have a great quarterback. So, but you look at Conference USA West, and like you said, Louisiana Tech is, the best team in the West, maybe in the conference right now. Southern Miss, although they took a step back this past week with UTSA, they still have a win over Kentucky. They look really solid. they're in the top in the league in all, both offense and defense. And then, like you guys mentioned, you have UTSA and UNT who seem to be taking that next step, in a step in the right direction with their performances of late. So, yeah, I mean, the West, looking back in the preseason, we didn't really think much of them. But they seem to have a pretty good, solid group of teams.
Well, Jay Ford, I will have to say, at the top, I still think the East has it. You've got Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky, and then Old Dominion.
Yeah, they're the surprise to me.
At 4-2. I mean, their only losses were on the road at App State and NC State. Old Dominion's really improved a lot, taking that place of Marshall, I guess, is one of the big three in the East. So, I mean, top three, you've got Tech, Southern Miss, and UTSA. Maybe they don't match up quite as well. But the top four or five, yeah, I think the West has it. They're definitely deeper.
Let's look at the conference this coming week, Javi. That Western Kentucky Middle Tennessee game on the road in Murfreesboro, another place that has basically no atmosphere. Floyd Stadium in Murfreesboro I don't know how some of these teams get up to play when they go on the road in some of these venues that have no atmosphere. Rice being one, North Texas for a long time is that way. I don't know if that's changed, but Middle Tennessee is very much that way. What do you see in that game?
Yeah, I mean, you always look at those crowd shots, right? And there just doesn't seem to be a lot of people in the stands. But yeah, I mean, that has to be probably the best game of the week. Rivalry game, even though some might not want to admit it. But yeah, I mean, two high-powered offenses, two good quarterbacks, two great coaches. You can't really ask for much more. This is always one of the marquee matchups in Conference USA. I do think that Middle Tennessee is going to be a little bit better this week over Western Kentucky, like I mentioned earlier. I just don't think Western Kentucky is the same team with Dowdy gone. I just don't think Western Kentucky is a powerful offense that they were 2 years ago or this past year. And Middle Tennessee, they look pretty solid to me.
You look at the other games. Louisiana Tech, of course, travels to Foxborough to take on UMass. We've talked a little bit about that game. We'll talk more about it later. Florida International and Charlotte, maybe the pillow fight of the week inside of the conference. FIU's favored by 5. That should be how that game ends. But Charlotte did knock off the other Florida twin this past week in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, even though Charlotte got their first Conference USA win last week, last week against FAU, but FIU seems to be improving a little bit, but still pretty weak squad. I mean, it's a toss-up for me. I could see either team winning it, but I'll probably pick FIU in that one.
And then the one that probably on paper looks like the pillow fight of the week, Marshall and Florida Atlantic. Marshall's got to get back on the winning ways. They probably look to take this out on FAU. I don't see this one being closed. The line's 12. I think Marshall probably covers that.
Well, and that FAU.
Yeah, I mean you have to expect Marshall to bounce back from a bad start, right? I mean, they're struggling, but they still have that pedigree of winning. Doc Holliday's a great coach. And FAU just can't catch a break. So, I mean, I expect that to continue this game.
It's interesting. The FAU fans are really calling for Charlie Partridge's head. I mean, this guy was recruiting Florida talent up to Arkansas and was a really hot assistant and a big-time hire for FAU. And now, I mean, the fans have turned on him. It's just hard to imagine not being able to have success at either FAU or FIU. I know a lot of that talent goes out of state. But my goodness, I mean, they just cannot seem to get ahead.
And then the last game of the week, Southern Miss travels to, or no, never mind, UTSA, sorry, UTSA and Rice. This should be a moment that UTSA can flex their muscles and show if they're not necessarily for real or not, because Rice is bad at football. But the line's only 3.5. UTSA, if they really want to make a statement across the conference, needs to win this one handily.
Like we talked earlier, UTSA has been really good on the road. Unfortunately, that has not translated to on the road. They really struggled with Colorado State. They struggled miserably with Old Dominion. So we'll see how they bounce back from arguably one of their biggest wins ever. Like you said, if UTSA can come in again, and much like they did against Southern Miss, get up early, dominate the game, win by a, I'm not saying a blowout like last week, but maybe by 14 points, and just show that they're not one of the bottom teams in the conference. They have a real good chance to make a statement. And also, they could get on a roll here with UTEP and UNT coming up. They could rattle off four straight wins before November, which would be pretty impressive.
And then, of course, Southern Miss travels to LSU. And going back to that Rice-UTSA game, that's another atmosphere that will be basically no atmosphere.
Well, and I was going to say, too, you mentioned being able to run off some wins. I mean, you've got Rice on the road, which is a bad team. But then you've got UTEP and North Texas coming to UTSA, and it's so hard to play at UTSA. I mean, UTSA is like a different team there. So you've got a chance to really be 5-3, and that would be a really good start. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go to the North Texas game here in a few weeks. I'll see about that atmosphere. But Rice, I've never been to, and I don't know if I ever want to.
80,000 seats, I think, at Rice, in that Rice Stadium, and maybe 20,000 people go. If they're lucky, probably not even that. Probably 10,000 people are there. But then the last game of the week, Southern Miss travels to LSU after the bye week that probably LSU didn't want. 26-point LSU favorite. They should be able to handle that line. Maybe Southern Miss covers it just barely and loses by 24. But Southern Miss doesn't have a chance of beating LSU.
Not this week.
No, especially with like you said, the unwanted bye week that LSU had. Southern Miss is a great team, but they're not that great, especially when you compare them to a team like LSU. Like you said, I think they would be lucky to cover that spread.
Javi, really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We'll have you back on again in the coming weeks to recap some more Conference USA football.
Thanks, guys.
Javi Cardenas from birdsup.com joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Give us a little UTSA perspective on the conference since they had that big victory over Southern Miss last week in the Alamo Dome. Other side of the break, we'll have Frank Smith to talk a little UMass football from up in New England. This will be a fun one, guys. Probably the first New England interview here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Maybe he talks like he's from Boston. Tell us where he parked the car.
In that clam chowder.
Go to break before this goes any further.
Let's go to break. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. We're still trying to get Frank Smith on the horn to talk a little UMass football here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We'll preview the game a little bit. This tough team to find any information about.
Yeah, I mean, UMass is not looking good on paper. I mean, they're 1-5, but they've had some close losses. They start the season going to Florida and only lose 24-7, but it was close at halftime. They lose to Boston College 26-7. They were in it with Mississippi State just about the whole time, lost 47-35. Lost to Tulane 31-24, and then Old Dominion just beat them by 20. But, you know, they've been fairly competitive. I think Coach Holtz mentioned they've had some injuries. They don't seem to score a ton of points, but their defense is pretty solid.
Ended up watching the end of that Mississippi State-UMass game. I think it was on the American Sports Network. I was just flipping through channels one Saturday, and it was close. It was really close. Mississippi State pulled away at the end, but I guess – inconsistency maybe in the style of UTSA. I don't know. I mean, it's there's nothing that we can really say because I have no idea what to say about UMass.
I'm hoping that our caller here on the Fairway Carts Amended Hotline can shed some light on UMass football, because it's not exactly the easiest thing in the world to find information out about, but he's the guy to talk to. He's got the UMass football blog. Frank, thanks for joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. How's it going?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, just give us some overall thoughts on the UMass football program. If you got any updates on the injuries front, Skip Holtz talks about these injuries, and I've struggled to find any information out about the status of these guys, and then what you expect in this game on Saturday.
You probably won't. UMass tends to be a lot like Bill Belichick. They keep injuries really under their hat. So you know as much as we do. They just are not forthcoming about things like that.
So you look at this matchup, and then you Skip Holtz said that he expects both quarterbacks to play, no matter if one of them has been hurt. Correct?
Yes. Ross Thomas was named the starter before the season started. He is a dual threat quarterback. He has excellent legs. He was hurt on the BC game and then hurt again last week. He did come back after halftime, but he was out of uniform. So I really have no update on him at all. Our other quarterback is Andrew Ford, who is a left-hander. He looks like Kenny Stabler when he throws. He's an excellent quarterback, but he has thrown a number of bad interceptions so far.
You look at the running backfield. Marquise Young is definitely the guy that makes it go back there. Coach Holt spoke very highly of him yesterday in his press conference. What is Young's biggest strength as a running back?
He's fast. He has serious speed. Last year I was at Notre Dame, and he went right through the center of Notre Dame's line and went 80 yards untouched, and all those five-star Notre Dame defensive backs couldn't catch him. He's a speed guy. He's about 6 feet, maybe a little under, and around 200 pounds, but his primary asset is his straight line speed.
So at 6 foot 200, he's got prototypical running back size. So that's a very good thing to have if you're him, to have that elite speed. They've got some fullbacks on their rosters. Will they line up in an I formation and run some pretty traditional football power football sets?
Yes, UMass is kind of unusual. We run a pro set heavy, which not many teams run anymore. That's with a fullback. The fullback rarely gets any carries, but Coach Whipple likes fullbacks who can catch the ball out of the backfield. So they will, either attempt the block or slip the block, and then and can be used like a tight end out of the backfield.
Well, when you look at this depth chart, and there's only one wide receiver position listed, there's only 10 positions listed, it's obviously going to be some pretty power football when there's a tight end, a fullback, and only one wide receiver position listed in the depth chart. One Achilles heel for Louisiana Tech in the past has been covering a tight end, and I see that Adam Brenneman is very much a pass-catching tight end. They're the second leading receiver for the Minutemen.
Yes, he's been good for us so far. He was almost out of football because of a series of injuries. He has excellent hands. I think he's still recovering somewhat from 2 years off. He had 10 catches against Mississippi State. So he does have good hands. He does not have a lot of speed right now, but his athleticism seems to be improving as he gets farther away from his injuries.
And the speed guy for UMass is on the offensively is it's definitely Andy Isabella, the 5'9" receiver, who's kind of your the water bug, for lack of a better term, outside. They'll probably get it to him in space, let him run by the corners. He's got elite speed out there.
He's been a big surprise. He did not have good hands last year. His pass catching abilities have much improved. And he was the State of Ohio 100-meter champ. He has really good speed.
You look at the offensive line. They've given up some sacks, it looks like, on paper, and that probably has led to several of Ford's of interceptions because he's probably feeling a lot of pressure. Have they struggled to protect the passer?
Yes. It's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other. Ford has a tendency to hold the ball a long time. So while some of it can be laid at the offensive lineman's feet, Ford needs to get rid of the ball when nothing's happening.
Defensively, give us an overview of what UMass likes to do and how they'll try to slow down this Louisiana Tech passing offense that's ranking in the top 10 in the country offensively.
Defense has been the real improvement this year. The UMass defense went toe-to-toe to Florida and shut them down into the fourth quarter. They have an excellent pass rush. They were missing four starters against Old Dominion, which did not help them last week. But if UMass has its full complement of defenders, it's easily the strength of the UMass team. They generally play a 4-3, although they played some 3-4 last week. If they have all their bodies, the UMass defense is pretty good.
So who's that? Deshaun Downey, I know, is the pass rushing specialist for UMass. Who? What other guys to look out for as far as the pass rushers?
Well, we've been getting good pressure up the middle, and they've been rotating two sets of people, two sets of defensive linemen. Primarily, Deshaun Downey has been good. Our nose tackle, Ali Musa, has been occupying more than one offensive lineman. Shaquille Holiness on the other defensive end is also good.
Those are heck of names. Shaquille Holiness has got to land on the all name squad in college football.
Yeah, we have some great names here. Yeah.
I'll look at this cornerback James Allen, who won't be confused for a tall fellow at 5'8", 155 pounds. Has his height been a limiting factor for him covering receivers on the outside?
Yes, somewhat. Yes, our two outside cornerbacks are not big. They have good speed, but Mississippi State, in particular, was able to take advantage of the size difference.
You talked about the four injuries against Old Dominion. What were those four injuries, and what kind of injuries were they, or did it appear that they have? I know that UMass is close to the vest with the injuries.
They can't keep it under wraps if they don't play. Starting interior linebacker Shane Huber, who is our best run stopper, he did not play against Old Dominion. We also have a JUCO, Teddy Lowry, who was 6 feet 225, and he was just having an outstanding year. He was the leading tackler against Florida and second leading tackler against BC and Mississippi State, and he did not play. What happened last week against Old Dominion is UMass would get defensive pressure by blitzing, and then Old Dominion would run up the middle, and we just weren't able to get to the guy quick enough to stop a first down or whatever. But that really hurt. Those three, Shane Huber and Teddy Lowry, hurt. Also, our other starting safety, Kerry Bailey Smith was also out, so we were missing both starting safeties.
So were those injuries that happened the game before Old Dominion, or have they been hurt for a few weeks?
Shane Huber had been out for a couple weeks. Teddy Lowry and our other Kerry Bailey Smith. We didn't hear about that until they just didn't dress against Old Dominion.
Gotcha. So it could be those two could be out this week, and Huber very well could play again because he's been out for several weeks. That gives us a better idea of what this injury situation looks like for the Minutemen. Special teams, has that been a strength, a weakness for UMass so far?
Special teams have been the punting has been very good. Especially against Mississippi State, I think we had two or three punts well inside the 20-yard line. The field goal kicking has been a pain in UMass's butt since we moved to FBS. I think we're 1-for-1 this year, one for two in field goals this year in field goal kicking. Kickoffs have been good. But field goal, definitely we do not have a all-conference or if we were in a conference, a strong field goal kicking so far.
Well, Frank, if you give us a prediction, we always make everybody that comes on here give a score prediction of what they expect on Saturday. So you're no different. I've got to put your feet to the fire and give us a score prediction for Saturday's game at Foxborough.
Well, that's going to be interesting. Louisiana Tech is one of the best offensive teams in the country. My prediction is somewhat based on whether we get our defensive starters back. If we did good against Florida and Mississippi State, I think we could keep Louisiana Tech to like 24 points. If they're not there, then I think the score is going to be larger. I think it would be like 38-17 Bulldogs.
So you think Louisiana Tech wins no matter what, or what, how do you feel?
Yes. You're just ahead of us in the curve we just got 85 scholarships last year. We're not where we want to be in depth yet. We're definitely better this year, but Louisiana Tech is one of the premier group of five teams, and we're just not at that level yet. Hopefully, we haven't yet pulled off an upset. The defense, I think if everybody's there, is strong enough to give Louisiana Tech a hard time. But right now, I would say, Louisiana Tech should win comfortably.
Frank, really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Tough to find any information on UMass, and you've got it. And I appreciate you joining us here this Tuesday evening.
I had a great time. Thanks for talking with me.
Frank Smith joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio from the Northeast, giving us a little UMass flavor headed into this game Saturday in Foxborough and Gillette Stadium as Louisiana Tech travels to Massachusetts to take on the UMass Minutemen. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason Jones and Matt Valcho joining me here in studio this week. John Tabor, as always, working hard for us. Working hard for that money. Good stuff from Frank Smith on the Fairway Carts Amendment Hotline. We're brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston. Go see those guys in the historic Rogers Furniture Building on South Trenton Street in Ruston. Thing that stuck out to me the most was Frank saying, and I'm not going to discount him because I haven't watched a whole lot of UMass football this year, that they get a lot of pressure up the middle. Well, when you look at their depth chart, which given how close to the vest they play everything in Amherst, I'm kind of surprised that there's even a depth chart released. Their defensive tackles are less than heavy. Ali Musa is 6'2", 274. Tech's beefy offensive line should be able to handle that guy. Should. And then Shaquille Holiness, well, what a great name, 6'3", 257. And their depth chart says they're a 3'4", and here he says they're a 4'3".
I mean, if Dugas gets his hands on those guys, it's over.
If Shaquille Holiness plays either left end or right end, and either tackle gets their hands on him, he's 6'3", 257. The guy that's concerning is Deshaun Downey at 6'4", 225. He is their pass rusher extraordinaire. He's listed as a weak side linebacker, but he's saying if they play a 4-3, he's putting his hand in the dirt, which means he's lining up wide and it's tough to get to him.
Yeah, and we've noticed, some depending on what side he lines up, we've noticed some of the tackles struggling with those speed rushers and being able to get their hands on them. And so, we'll see who's getting the majority of the snaps in this game, but they've had to shuffle who starts at offensive tackle
Outlaw is playing really well right now.
Yeah, and so, you know, hopefully he does really well on that side. Hopefully Darryl Brown has a good game and the backups play well.
And if they don't, they'll put a tight end in, get an extra blocker, and be okay.
Yeah, I mean, if he's the only threat, yeah, you've got to do whatever it takes to stop him and then go from there. But I feel like, especially if they've got some linebackers out and they're both safeties have been hurt, Tech's running game should really thrive in this game.
But do you it's kind of – there's that question's been on Bleed Tech Blue, the message board, about if Tech needs to get the running game going early. I really feel like they've been pretty balanced thus far.
Yeah, I think so too. We've got the NCAA statistics here for Tech.
Rush offense is fifth in the – no, sorry – 76th in the country, 161 yards a game. It just so happens that the pass offense is fifth in the country at 365 yards a game.
But still, 165 yards on the ground is pretty good, especially when you're considered a passing team. It's not like they're putting up 50. So, I mean, I think they're running enough.
And then if their strength is running the football, and it sounds like it is, Tech's rush defense really isn't that bad. Now, the argument could be made, are people not running on it? People running on Tech because it's been so easy to pass on Tech. Probably a little bit of both. Tech has held, UTEP to below their season average. Believe they probably held WKU last week below their season average. The thing that's concerning about this trip for me, for Louisiana Tech, is the length, how far they've got to travel, and the weather. It's going to be colder than they're used to playing in. The highs in the upper 50s, the lows in the mid-30s. That's cold for Louisiana guys.
Yeah,
no matter what time of year it is.
I'd have been more concerned with the next week, just having back-to-back long trips, UMass and then FIU down in Miami. But now FIU's got a coaching change. They seem to be in a little bit of turmoil. I'm not as worried about that game. And I'm not that worried about this game. But you just feel like, you know, Tech seems to be rolling right now. At some point in the next 2 or 3 weeks, Tech could come in, maybe have a couple of turnovers, and play down to the level of competition. So you hope that's not the case, that they just really keep it clicking and bury some of these teams.
I think Sean Isabella has a story this week about Holtz's teams being 11-2 in October since he's been at Tech. And I know that is an obscure stat, but that's something – it's legitimate. 11-2 is nothing to sneeze at.
Well, and I think even going back to the Sonny Dykes days, the year that Tech kind of broke through and finally beat Nevada there at the end of the year, you know, you start out playing these bigger schools, and unfortunately, you mentioned the scheduling guys always screwing over Tech. I mean, you get Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee from the east side, and they're both at the beginning, top first half of the year. So, yeah, Tech's 3-3, but now you've got this weaker schedule coming up. Tech has a chance to go on a run, and that happens to be in October. So, you know, you got to take care of business, and right now it seems like the last few years Tech's been able to go on a roll starting in the second half of the season.
Good segue that you didn't do on purpose. Scheduling news. Louisiana Tech and Grambling will play in 2019 in the Joe, and then also Southern comes to town in 2018. So, two SWAC teams from Louisiana coming to the Joe, one being 10 miles down the road.
Three, maybe, if you go down Alabama. It's not very far. And so, I mean, that should be a good crowd. Southern showed that they'll bring a crowd when they came last time.
7,000 extra tickets.
Yeah, and you think the fact that they're going to travel well, but then also Grambling is right a rival there of Southern. They might want to come watch the Southern game. Some of those fans, if Grambling's on the road that week. So, and then the Grambling, Tech and Grambling have never played –
in Lincoln Parish.
Against each other in Lincoln Parish. So, I mean, this is a first. It should be a historic event. Maybe we'll see the first Tech sellout now that the stadium doesn't hold 30,000 anymore. What is it, 27 and some change? The highest recorded attendance games are ULM games that were around 27-something or 28. I mean, Tech might have their first ever sellout in that game. I would expect it.
While we're on that subject, is it time for the aluminum bleachers to come out of the Joe?
You're talking about the top two?
On the north end.
North end. I think at some point you have to take them out if you replace them with something that's more attractive. I would like to see.
Do you need that many seats, though?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tech's proven that the last few years they can put 25, 26 in there consistently, but there's no room for growth if you take them out, because then you're down to, what, 24?
So you're using the church model. If you're 80%, if you're 80% full, you're full.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I think more fans will come if there's more chances to park somewhere within a mile radius, and if there's seats to be had. If they feel like they're fighting traffic and fighting crowds and there's nowhere to sit, you know, I don't think people will – the people that don't care that much won't come. But if you – make a little more room, I think you have a chance to improve on that at some point, especially if Tech keeps growing the enrollment.
I'm just of the opinion that it's time, if you pull them out and you create a supply and demand issue. Yeah, you've got – some people say you've got a too high a ticket price. Well, if you've got a supply and demand issue, you can justify that higher ticket price.
Well, yeah, and maybe you take out those wings, you create the higher ticket price, create the demand, and then if the demand is so much that you need to bowl in that north side,
then you do it.
Then you do it, bump it up to 30 again or whatever. And
or even just if you take those out, I don't know what the official numbers will be. I think it'll be close to 24 would be my guess.
Yeah, me too.
You bowl it in and make it 26. You put 2,000 seats in. Don't put the entire number back. That's not the next project at Tech. The next project at Tech for football, after the press box is done, will likely be an indoor practice facility. There's an in-depth discussion of where that should go if you want to go beat your head against the wall with all the Tech fans. We've got the place for you on the Tech Drive message board. Lots of discussion of where that should go, would go, will go on bleedtechblue.com right now. But that's likely the next addition for Louisiana Tech for football facilities.
Yeah, and it needs to be. I think that's the next one. But then something's got to be done about that north end zone. Even if it's just for aesthetics, getting those wings off.
New video board.
Bigger or newer, more up-to-date
something
video
that's actually
board.
Widescreen and not a square. I mean,
yeah.
How long have square TVs been gone?
And
wild.
Just kind of clean it up a little bit.
Matt doesn't even remember square TVs.
Oh, no, I do. We had one in my living room for forever.
Did you have the cabinet one?
Was
no.
It built into a – was it wood?
It was close. It was a built-in on a like a brick – It was brick, a fireplace, and there was this little opening that we put our TV in. And
oh yeah,
that needs to make a comeback. Brick TV.
I was almost in high school.
Says the brick salesman.
I was almost in high school by the time we got rid of my square TV.
I definitely remember built console TVs.
Oh yeah, and I have a relative that actually had one go out, bought a new one.
And put it on top of it.
No, put it inside. Had it custom fit inside her
Excellent.
Old cabinet.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what we did. We bought a TV small enough to fit in that hole, even though it was a widescreen. But now I look at my widescreen up mounted on the wall now. I'm just like, where? How? How did I even manage?
And now Tabor says, enough of this talk.
Yeah.
The producer is doing his job. Other side of the break, we'll give our predictions for this Louisiana Tech UMass game coming up Saturday in Foxborough. We'll be back right after. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here, ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. A little less than 10 minutes left in the show. Good show this week. Matt and Jason joining me along with John Tabor. Before we get to those predictions, you've got open phone lines, 888-993-7762. The Fairway Carts of Minden hotline. Send us a text on the text line on the same number, 888-993-7762. Do have a text from earlier in the show, going back to Jason and I's little discussion/argument thing. They also didn't try any stretch or end-around type run plays. The announcers hit it on the head saying that Tech better be careful slowing down so much, trying to bleed the clock, that it would get them out of rhythm. So somebody coming to your defense, Jason. But I've got to go to the guy on the BleedTechBlue.com boards that comes to my defense. We weren't exclusively running the football on the milk-the-clock drives. We started milking the clock at 49-31. Ran 27 plays from then on, 14 passes, 13 rushes. Penalties killed the drives, not the inability to move the football. Penalties did kill them. And that was, and I haven't complained about the officiating until here in the last segment, that was the worst crew I've seen in that building ever. And I say that every year. And I think it was
every week.
I think that was the same crew that came that's been in there, and I've said it before.
They were bad. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
That tripping call, what a joke.
Yeah, that was absurd. They were just looking for something to call. But why reach in your pocket for that one? I mean, come on.
Pathetic. I wonder who the officials will be for this one. UMass is not in a conference, so there's no independent officials.
I would assume it's
probably
going to be
Pac-12.
Or MAC.
Yeah, it's going to be just something random.
I bet it's MAC conference.
Why not Pac-12? You know, let's up a little bit.
Let's travel them out from the West Coast to Massachusetts when it's in the 50s. I don't think they want it. Their assignment secretary would hate them that day.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Looking at this game overall, Tech should have their way. When we haven't talked about our friends at Massey this week, so let's get to them. They've got the game 38-23, Louisiana Tech, 85% chance of victory.
They've also got Tech favored against Southern Miss now, so Tech is now favored by Massey the rest of the way. With backing up Brave.
With Southern Miss being the lowest chance of victory at 54%, 38-36. That's called a barn burner, ladies and gentlemen. Vegas has this line at 14. It's opened up at 16, down to 14.5. So they're right on with Massey at 15. Then we look at the advanced analytics on footballstudyhall.com. They have the margin of victory for Tech. I got some kind of a window in the middle of here that's getting them away. 13.7 projected margin. Projected score of 38.9 to 25.2, win probability of 79%. So everybody's right on the money with the margin of victory. So two touchdowns.
So given that, who wants to take the first stab at it?
Matt, since you were the closest last week, you'll go first because you're the best at this. You had the margin of victory, but you're way off the points.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I can take me being the best at it. I predicted 35,
pretty much tongue in cheek.
35-32. I mean, it ended 55-52. I mean, it's 20 points off, but I knew it would be a close one. I don't know. That's whatever. All right.
Semantics.
Yeah, no. Defense has been looking shaky. It's nothing seems to be working, or if they go up, they end up blowing it. It's rinse and repeat from Middle Tennessee to Western Kentucky. I think UMass, a team that played Mississippi State close, I think they'll get 17, and I still think Tech's offense is going to go off like they have been. I'm going to say 49-17.
Ooh, big win.
Woo!
Nice.
Go big or go home, huh, Matt Valcho?
Yeah, why not?
When you're bad at it, you might as well go swing for the fence.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
that's in honor of Big Poppy.
Yeah. What a bummer to
speaking
of Boston, like that.
Boston.
Baston. You got me speaking in the accent. The
Green Monster.
Jason, you got something?
I'm going to go.
Since you missed last week, you really should have started this off.
Yeah, well, I was going to be quiet as long as I could. I'm going to go 34-21.
You know, now that you're like
Tech.
Now that I'm looking at it on the paper, that is a lot.
That's a lot.
Maybe 42. That'll make me feel a little bit better.
Take a touchdown away. I'm not far from you with the 42. 42-24.
So y'all are both going field goal for UMass after their expert said that they've only kicked one field goal all year. I waited until y'all made your picks before I said that. Tabor, what you got?
Chip shot.
34-13, Tech. He thinks the defense is going to get it right this week.
He's got two field goals.
Or a blocked extra
or
point.
Or a blocked extra point.
Missed extra point. Not block. That's not going to happen. Could.
We have confidence.
We didn't
never
miss,
know.
We didn't write them down last week. Not that it matters.
I mean, we put it in our who has the edge piece. That's close to writing it down as we're going to get.
It's close enough for government work, as they say. I really, Tech should win this one pretty easily.
I mean, they should, but you never know.
If they play down to their competition, they get UMass gets their linebackers back, their safeties come back. They've got a lot of injuries there on the defensive side of the ball. That's tough from an offensive game planning perspective. And whenever you don't see, you have nothing to go off of from the week because there's no media.
And I do like what somebody said in the forums. This could be a trap game. A long trip. It's in a stadium with no atmosphere. Like I said, long business. It's a long trip. No atmosphere. They played other teams pretty close. I mean, they might take them kind of
lightly.
Yeah. I mean, you look at UMass like us. We have no idea what to think of UMass, and you can almost guarantee that some people on the Tech team feel that same way.
Got to avoid that. It doesn't matter who's across the ball. Go out there, do your job, execute to the best of your ability, and take care of business. I mean, how many cliches can I put in one sentence? I just put them all in one.
Plenty.
That's
all we can use for a team like UMass. We don't know what else to say.
Yeah, this is a potential trap game. Tech's got to avoid that. Come back next week. We'll talk about that game. We'll recap it and then preview.
Possibly
FIU.
Possibly another trap game. Back-to-back long
road trips. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back. Same time, same place. See you then.